Welcome to Uprising. Each episode looks inside what it takes to lead the most dynamic and successful cultural movements. Some of them in the business world, some in the social realm, some in politics, and some in between. To see why people start uprisings, what gives those initiatives momentum and keeps them going, and most important, what lessons can you learn from these movements and how to apply them to your business and even personal life. Let's explore the secret to sparking movements that move people into action.
Passionate ideas.
Controversial ideas.
Uprising ideas.
The power is now in the hands of anyone.
To start a cultural movement.
Your movement.
To move the world.
Hello, this is Scott Goodson, and welcome to Uprising. So we've been doing this show for about 6 months now, and we've got a number of episodes up. If you have a moment, we'd really appreciate if you would give us some feedback on our Facebook page, Uprising Movements on Facebook. And if you really are enjoying this show, please rate us on iTunes. The more stars we get, the more people we get to listen to our show, and it spreads, much like a movement. Today, we are going to talk about a movement that is really relevant for people as they probably go through life in general, but more relevant when they turn about 30. 30 years old, people start to relax a bit. They aren't as uptight. They're more settled in their ways. And we're going to look at a movement that is challenging us to step outside our comfort zone, stop collecting stuff, and try to find happiness in collecting experiences. Most people are searching for happiness. We read about this a lot these days. In fact, there are economists who believe happiness is the best indicator of the health of a society. Many of us know that money can make you happier, though after your basic needs are met, it doesn't make you that much happier. But one of the biggest questions is how to use your money, since most of us have it as a limited resource. One of the enemies of happiness is adaptation, says Dr. Thomas Gajlovic, a psychology professor at Cornell University who's been studying the question of money and happiness for over 2 decades. He says we buy things to make us happy and we succeed, but only for a while. New things are exciting at first, but then we adapt to them. So rather than buying the latest iPhone or BMW, Gajlovic suggests you'll get more happiness spending money on experiences, like going to art exhibits, doing camping trips, learning a new skill, or traveling. And he says that we are, in the end, the sum total of all our experiences. This makes a lot of sense to us. We can do this here and there, but for most of us, it's not easy to take the time to experience an extraordinary life. We're just too darn busy. Perhaps the big problem is making the mental space to do this. Time keeps on rolling after all. Chris Giganto is the author of Getting Yourself Out There, which tells a story of how deciding to step away helps you gain new perspectives about yourself and move forward faster upon your return in the right direction. Chris has figured out a way to help us create that mind space. Let's call it the Be Extraordinary in 30 Before You're 30 Years Old movement. Bit of a mouthful, but you get the idea. It's a mindset shift. Chris, welcome to the show.
My name is Chris Giganto, and you know, before I was 30, I was heading in the direction that most of my colleagues were heading right out of college. We were growing in our careers. We were motivated to get on top, but we weren't stopping to take time for ourselves and really thinking about what was important. Just to give you an idea, I have a civil engineering degree from Georgia Tech, and at 28, I thought I was going to conquer the world. But that all changed when I realized that the world that I wanted to conquer wasn't the same way I viewed it back when I was just out of college. And so, you know, why I thought 30 was an important year is, you know, you've had some experience. You've had about 5 or 6 years of work experience, and you get a sense of what you like and what you don't like. And, you know, one of the things you realize is that What if you made the wrong choice? What if you made the wrong choice in your career because you made the choice when you were 23? And a lot of people just sort of stay in that career, or they go back to school and try to find another one. But what if you don't know what you want to do? but you know what you don't want to do. And so that was kind of where I was. My path was already charted ahead, and I didn't know what I wanted, but I knew what I was doing wasn't exactly it, but I didn't have time to think about it. And so my wife and I decided, you know what, we're going to pause. We're going to pause and see where our decision takes us. And so that's when, after looking back on my story, I thought having an experience or being extraordinary in 30, before you're 30, is critical, because you can do it in 30 days, 30 hours, 30 weeks, or 30 months. It doesn't matter, but you just have to be in the mindful context of that you're doing something extraordinary out of your normal self.
What you're doing with this idea is really sort of stopping people in their tracks and saying, when you get to this point in your life, you know, ask some questions that are going to maybe change everything that you are, or maybe just a little bit of who you are or where you're going.
A lot of my friends at the time said, you're derailing your career. You read a lot of the blogs out there, and you know, you always hear that it's not derailing your career, or you are derailing your career and you're confused on what you should do. But the idea is to gain that perspective, right? Because the things you've accumulated up until that point are obviously not providing you the perspective on how to move forward. They're just things you've accumulated. So when you spend money on experiences, or you just have experiences, those experiences provide perspective. So the way I look at it is there's two easy ways, Scott. There's the experiences provide growth, right? So the more times you go and have experiences, the more you grow individually. And guess what? Growth provides opportunities. And so the more you grow, the more the way you see the world is different, the more opportunities you're going to create for yourself. That's one equation.
And growth is so important for not only, I mean, for actually growing, but also because without it, you shrink. I mean, as a person, really, as a person, you need that stimulation for your mind, right?
Exactly. And so that's the way I always look at it. And the other one is experiences create stories. And stories are how you relate to people. So if you don't have stories to tell, then you're going to relate to people the same way you've been relating to people for the past however many years. And what if you're relating to the wrong people? Or what if you're not relating to the people you should be relating to? And so my thought is that all leads into this notion of experiences gives growth. Growth provides opportunities. Experiences give you stories. Stories help you relate to different people that you never thought you would relate to.
That's fascinating. And that's really, I mean, I think that's fascinating, just that thought, really, to open yourself up. Because the biggest challenge of all is getting out of the rut, right? Getting out of that little space you're in, whatever that space is.
So here's an example of how it worked for me. So when I was a sophomore in college, you know, I started out as a history major. I loved history. I thought it was going to be where I was going to spend my time. I wanted to be a professor and a soccer coach. I had it all planned out when I was 21, or 19, actually. And so I decided to, I was take a math class, and I ended up doing pretty good. I'd never taken math before, seriously. I never really cared about it. And took a math class and said, you know what, this is pretty cool. I can do this. So I said, you know, I need to change my major, but I don't know what it's going to be. It'll have to be something with math, but I'm not sure. So I set out on a 6 month journey to hike the Appalachian Trail. And I spent 6 months in the woods. The first 4 to 6 weeks I spent alone, literally hiking by myself, thinking, just in the zone. And then the last bit, I met people. And the people that I met aren't the people that you would normally think of. These are people from Stanford and Dartmouth and Rensselaer and from NC State. And guess what they were? They were all engineers. And I'm like, they were good at math. And they were really cool. And I wanted to be like them. And they had the same likes. And, you know, I could relate to them. We were telling the same stories. And so when I got back, I decided, you know what? I don't want to be a history major. I want to be an engineer. And what kind of engineer do I want to be? The same kind they were. And they were, majority of them were civil engineers. And they went on to have successful careers. And that's how an experience changes your entire perspective. And I was 19 at the time.
When did you decide to do this shift? And what was the sort of the catalyst for your change?
So the catalyst was I wasn't clear on what my next steps were. And so I broke it down in some simple steps. And so to be extraordinary, the first step is you have to declare it. You literally have to just make the decision and decide on your path forward. So when I was 19, decided that I had to go do something different. Didn't know what it was going to be. I was pretty good at hiking. Figured I'd go do that. When I was 29, I was pretty good at sailing and I owned a big boat. I might as well go do that. So you have to declare it. And then once you say, I'm going to do this, and you make the hardest decision of all, it's that decision. When you make the right decision, in my case, the world conspires to make it happen for you. It's unbelievable how all the doors suddenly open and say, you know what? That was the right decision. go forward. And that's how it happened. And so that's the first step, is to just simply declare. The second step is to sort of set the goal. Decide what you value and what's important. For me at the time of 19, I decided, you know, I really valued being in the woods and trying to conquer something less than 4,000 people had done, is to hike Mount Katahdin and hike 2,000 miles. The third step is you have to make trade-offs. So you have to then understand, if this is what's important to you and this is the decision you made, there's other things you cannot do. So you cannot accumulate things. You cannot spend your money on things, because those things are going to prevent you from doing what you've set out to do, what you've declared you're going to go do. And then one of the most important things, Scott, and this is where people say, well, there's no way I could ever do that. The most important thing is to have an exit plan, is to plan what happens afterwards. So when I left when I was 19, I had already been accepted into college to the next school that I was going to go to. When I left when I was 29, I had already had a job offer a year in advance. And so you always have to think of your exit plan first, so that you're not just sort of floundering when you come back. You have direction, and it's a direction that may not be exactly where you want to go, but it's a direction where you can then sort of plug back into society to help determine where you go. A lot of times it's where you need to go, but sometimes it may not be. So don't feel like you have to have it figured out in your exit plan.
Do you think that there's ways for people out there who might be listening to you today and say, wow, I love what he's saying, but I have no clue what I would do. I have no passion. Like, I don't want to go sailing. I don't want to go walking in the mountains. How do I find a passion or something that, you know, is a habit that I need to get out of in order to, you know, change my trajectory?
That's where people struggle a lot, right? You have the I wishers, right? Everyone says, I wish I would have done that. I mean, everybody says that. I haven't met a person who says, I wish I could have done that. Well, it's the I wishers versus the I ams, right? So the I ams are people that are decisive and directive and determined. So anytime you said, you know, I wish I could have done that, well, that's something that you value that you didn't fulfill on. That's something that you thought was important that you didn't go do. And so that's sort of where you start, is think about the times that you said, I wish. The other thing is, think about what's most important to you. You know, is it spending time with your family or your wife or a loved one? Is it spending time by yourself? You could even break it down that simple. And you don't have to go away for 3 years, 6 months, 30, you know, that's why you just need to be in the mindset for 30 hours. Just a small amount of time to get you out of the day-to-day. And that's really how you go about figuring it out.
So in your experiences, can you kind of give us an example of how you did that?
The sailing one, when I was 19, this one was the hardest, right? Because here we are in our career. We're getting pushed and pulled from our companies. My company had made me offer to stay, and I wasn't sure whether I should take it or not. It was hard to turn down. But the decision, we said on September 1st, 2006, regardless of where we're at, we're making the decision. We put a date to it. We said September 1st. Why September 1st? Why not? It was just a date. And we gave ourselves 8 weeks to make the decision. And sure enough, on September 1st, I can tell you where I was. My wife and I, we were in St. Leonard's Creek, one of our favorite anchorages, and we were out on a sailboat spending the weekend. And we looked at each other, and the sunset was going down, and the sky was purple, and we were the only boat in the harbor. And we looked at each other and we said, you know, it's pretty clear what our decision has to be. She says, it is. If we want to live life like this and really find ourselves for the next 8 months, someone have more time together like this. And I said, well, the only way we can do that is by going away for 8 months on the boat. And we can have this time together where we're just free to think what we want to think and to do what we want to do. And if we want to have that, we have to make the right decision, and that is to leave. And so that's really... at that point on September 1st, 2006, we declared it. That's how it worked for us. And then we said October 31st, we're going to leave. And then we set the goal. And then it was just trying to figure out how to get the boat ready and how to get everything ready. And then we were starting to prepare ourselves and our minds for this. And there were so much things we had to do. We had to make financial decisions. We had to figure out where to put our stuff. And obviously, we didn't want to have a lot of stuff. And we had to figure out how we were going to make the dreaded crossing over the Gulf Stream from Florida to the Bahamas and really think about the tough sort of passages we were going to have to make. And then it started to get real. We had to buy charts and chart plotters and all these things that we never knew about because we weren't experienced in this. And so then we started that's what happened when we set our goal. And then that's where the trade-offs came in, because now we were trading off, well, do we sell a car or do we keep the car? Or do we put our stuff in storage, we're going to move it to our parents' house. And so all that stuff became part of the trade-offs. And then, obviously, plans went after. I flew down to Atlanta, got a job offer a year in advance, and came back. And then the last thing is, the last step is to live in the moment, is to completely unplug. And that was the best thing that ever happened. So on October 31st, 2006 was the day we unplugged. And that's all taking calculated risk. And then the I wish mentality, we activated on the things that we'd wished for. And now I have more stories than I can think of about, and I can relate to more people than I ever thought I could before, because there's always a common thread when you go on an adventure quite like that.
You know, it's important to just stop and smell the roses along the way. It's a bit of a cliche, but I think it's, you know, the truth.
You've got to put it in perspective, right? And so when I tell people this, it makes so much sense. You know, you're 29 or you're 30. You normally retire at what, 62? Let's say 60, whatever it is, 60, 62. You have worked for, let's say, 5 years, 6 years. You have another 32 years of work left. You have, your work life is, you're talking about 1 year out of the next 32 years to make sure you're doing exactly what you want to do. So when you put it in perspective, you almost ask yourself, why wouldn't I take a year or take time to myself to make sure that the direction I'm heading, the perspective that I have, is the right one, because I've got 32 more years of work in my career.
What I love very much about what you're saying is the framework that you're providing, right? This thought of, it is really at that time in your life where you've done your education, you've had your first taste of work, and what you're saying is, you know, be extraordinary in 30 before you're 30. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because you told me about it. And I love the idea of giving yourself this sort of mental framework, whether you do it for 30 hours or 30 days or 30 weeks, but just really trying to use that life stage as a real opportunity to kind of stop and experience your life in a truly generous and inspiring way.
Absolutely. I mean, so if you think about, let's just say you only can spend 30 hours. 30 hours is a camping trip with your friends, with your family, but it's a chance to disconnect, right? It's a chance to just go hide in the mountains for 30 hours or go hide somewhere for 30 hours. It's enough time for you to stop and reflect just out of the day-to-day. You're sort of breaking up the norm of what you would normally do in that weekend, right? When you're talking about 30 days, now a month, guess what? A month is enough time to build a habit. So what if you went somewhere where you said, you know, in 30 days, I want to be extraordinary and I want to give up all sweets, or I want to learn a new language, or I want to do something completely outside my comfort zone and build a habit. You can build a habit in 30 days, or at least put yourself on the path to that. And so I like 30 days because it's enough time for you to put yourself in that mindset. And the great thing about 30 days is you don't necessarily have to go away for 30 days. You could do it after work for an hour, for 30 days for an hour. Or ideally, you'd want to sort of stop what you're doing and go away for 30 days. But this isn't something where you actually have to quit everything you're doing. It's just being in that mindset. Now, I'm sorry, but for 30 weeks, you probably, you know, that's like an 8-month trip or a 6-month trip. And in that time, that's enough time to, you could either build a new habit or take on something where you know, take yourself out of your current situation, because you'll transform yourself in 30 weeks for sure. You'll get a whole new perspective.
We're not talking about the type of change that is like, I want to get more sleep, or I want to stop eating crap, or I'm going to read 10 books. You're talking about really about being a curious person, like try and take an adventure or make some big sort of goal. Am I understanding that correct?
So you have a
big memory, or are you just talking about small, you know, details?
Well, it could be both. You know, for like the 30 hours, yeah, I would say it's small details. But when you start to get into like 30 days and 30 weeks, you know, that's where your new perspective on things, you're going to transform sort of who you are, simply because you're doing stuff you never thought you could, right? Margaret and I, my wife, never thought we could sail. We were the youngest people we met out there. We never thought we could cross the Gulf Stream. We never thought we could sail to the Tropic of Cancer. Never thought. But when you achieve those things, you start to build confidence. And that confidence builds confidence for other things in your life. And that's where you start to, then you start to be extraordinary, right? That's when you're being extraordinary, and that's when you're out of your comfort zone. And so this isn't like giving up candy for 30 weeks or 30 months. This is something where you're going to transform yourself personally because you're doing something you never thought you could. And when people do that, they get hope. And when they get hope, they get that confidence. And then you can't stop them.
A lot of people say, well, when I turn 85, I'm going to have a bucket list and I'm going to visit XYZ. But then they turn 75 and maybe they can't travel to China or whatever. You know, it's almost like, you know, enjoy it along the way rather than trying to wait till the end.
Right? Oh, Scott, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's like when we were out in the Bahamas, you know, we were with a lot of people who they were living their bucket list, but they were also like in their 60s and 70s, right? And so while we were getting off and exploring islands and diving for lobsters and hunting the coral reefs, they were sitting on their boat just relaxing. And we were out and are in the, and that's the thing. So the type of adventure you have gives you a different perspective, right? So your perspective from the boat is very different than your perspective being adventurous on land. I mean, it could be as simple as training for a marathon, you know, training for a marathon in 30 weeks. And in that case, if you've never ran before, you're being extraordinary. You know, for someone who runs marathons every day, they're just doing what they normally do. But just simply trying to achieve something you never thought you could, that changes your whole perspective, and that bleeds into everything. That bleeds into your personal relationships and your career and where you go in life and your confidence and your perspective, everything. So it's not just quitting everything and leaving. It's doing something you never thought you could.
What advice do you have for people that are sort of listening to you and say, wow, I'd love to do all that, but you know, I'm one of those I wish guys or one of those I wish women.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the biggest enemy to being extraordinary is the routine, right? So it's all about, we get into our routines. We have what we do day to day. We, you know, leave work, maybe go to the gym, have dinner, hang out with friends, and then, you know, wash, rinse, and repeat the next day or get home, put the kids to bed. And so the routines is the biggest one, and you've got to step back. And so it's that simple. It's just stepping back and saying, oh my gosh, am I in the routine I want to be in? Is this the routine I want to be in? It's just questioning that. And when you start to classify it as a routine, accept it. It's a routine. And say it's hard to be extraordinary when you're doing a routine, period.
And how does that, how has that whole experience shaped you today as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a professional? Like, in how are you different than you would have been if you wouldn't have done this?
Because I believe I can do anything, right? I'm a civil engineer working in marketing. I don't know too many of those, right? So no, there are no boundaries for me of things that I can achieve. And with my family, it's all about making them think that it's, you know, when is our next adventure, and making them think about it that way, because, you know, I don't want them to think of our family as routine. So we constantly take them camping and get them out into the outdoors, and we hike with them on the Appalachian Trail, and they're 3 and 5. So they're not going to remember this. But, you know, at the end of the day, Scott, we are planning another trip in 6 years to go away for 2 years on a 47-foot yacht. So they'll get plenty of that.
Life really, you know, is much bigger when you make your world bigger, when you break down those barriers, when you try. It's a really smart, really, really smart philosophy that you're expressing.
It's not like the world will forget where you are, who you are. It will be waiting for you when you get back. And so, you know, just taking a pause or doing something different is critical into helping shape who you've always wanted to be, who you've wished you wanted to be, instead, you know. And so go from an I wish person to an I am person. That's kind of how I look at the world.
You did it all together with Margaret, your wife. Do you think it's easier to do it with another person, so you have that sort of level of comfort and level of support, or do you think anybody can do it?
It just depends, right? So when I did it when I was 19, I was by myself.
Yeah.
With Margaret, it was great because, you know, we're so different. We're different people, but we share one thing, and that's a sense of adventure.
Yeah.
And if you ever find, you know, what we always tell each other is if life ever gets so hard or so bad, we both agree we've got this red button and we'll push it. And when we push that button, we quit our jobs and we go do something no matter where we're at, because we know life will be better on the other side. And having someone that believes that as well is critical for us, is for me anyways.
Do you think that your relationship has a deeper resonance because of this experience than if you wouldn't have gone off and jumped on a boat and headed into the great seas. I mean, is there a deeper connection that you have?
To me, when two people are together in that experience out of their comfort zone, true characters come, literally, they show up. And a lot of times people don't like who those true characters are. But in this case, we were very fortunate. And sometimes it might not work out for you. The true characters may come out and you may not like them. And then the right decision is to not be together. But for us, the true characters came out and they were the right people to be together. So in our case, it worked out really well.
Usually, I mean, if you're experiencing those things, your relationship tends to be a lot stronger, I think. You know?
Absolutely.
It's because I think it's the opposite that makes the relationship challenging. It's when you live a life where you're living in it in a kind of a default mode, and you're not challenged to find solutions, be open-minded, open yourself to new people and other things that you talked about. You know, as a result of that, you deepen your relationship, I think, with the other person. So.
I mean, we met people out there who were young. They were probably in their 40s, and they had really big jobs in Boston, and they basically took out around they went off on a boat around the world. Uh-huh. And I think they named their boat All Who Wander Are Not Lost. I believe that's the quote. Hmm. And so it was and it was really interesting because they didn't have kids yet, but they were so – you could tell like there was a special bond. And most couples we saw out there had that special bond. So I can see what you're talking about. I saw it. Hmm. Absolutely.
Do you think that people, let's say, in their 40s and 50s, can they also be extraordinary in those years, or is it 30 really that, you know, it causes a consternation that you need to sort of stop a serious life and open yourself up to new experiences?
Well, I hope you can do it when you're older, because I'm planning on doing it. But I think the perspective is just different. I really do. I think you go into, like, you know, the people we met in their 60s and 70s, they were all about sharing. They were all about teaching. They were all about, you know, telling us what they had learned. And I'm like, you know, from a 30-year-old, that's huge, because now you're getting a view into like what life is like at that age and what things they're thinking about and the kinds of ways that they approach things. So you're learning, whether it's you're learning from a new experience, but you're learning from someone who has experience, and that's the best kind of learning.
If I look at my own life, I think when I was younger, I was a lot more neurotic when I was like 18 to 30, you know, because you're worried about 50 different things, right? You're worried about your friends and your girlfriend and first job and all that stuff. And I think when you turn 30, you start to accept your life, and a level of acceptance begins to settle in, which is perhaps why 30 is such an important time.
I agree. Without question. I mean, it's sort of that inflection point. Even though you still have 30 more years, you're sort of shaping the direction those 30 years are going to head in, what industry you're going to be in or what kind of job you're going to be in. You know, chances are your habits have set in, things you like have set in, you're probably making roots somewhere. All that happens kind of in your 30s. And so that's why it was pivotal for us before we started setting down roots and having a family. And you can do it with a family, but for us, that's why it was important to do it.
Well, that's really inspiring. I think there are probably a lot of people out there who are listening to this who live in places like Dubai or in Japan or in other countries. And, you know, in United States and Canada and Australia, it's more common to have this kind of philosophy, although probably not as common as it should be. But in other parts of the world, it's unheard of. So I think this advice will be really valuable for people listening in other countries. So this is really terrific. I really appreciate it. I feel relieved that I no longer have to feel like a rebel be extraordinary. I can actually take time off, and, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It's scientific, I think, the way you described it. So I very much appreciate you joining us today. This is great. So everyone out there who is inspired by this chat, please make sure you take a look for Chris's book.
It's on Amazon. It's called Getting Yourself Out There.
Getting Yourself Out There. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, Chris.
Thank you for joining our uprising today and listening to our show. If you missed the show, or if you want to find out more about who was on, or if you want to learn more about how to create your own uprising, please go to uprisingmovements.com. You can also download this Uprising program from iTunes. Uprising was produced by Nicola Keneally and Adam Helen, with special help from Melanie Boardman, Karin Drakenberg, Philippa Freeman, Brianna Campbell, Fashad Faroudi, Mark Bruzzi, Will Isom, James Politi, and Jonathan Weeks. My name is Scott Goodson, and you've been listening to Uprising. What we can learn about movements and uprisings that are shaping our world in business, in society, and in between. For more on cultural movements and movement marketing, be sure to pick up a copy of the best-selling book Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements, available on Amazon.com. Music for Uprising composed by Charles Duchateau.